The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I am Avra Lewis with the North Carolina Reading Service, and for the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Essence Magazine. The first article is from BlackEnterprise.com and is titled, New York County Appoints First Ever Black Woman Sheriff in State History. New York has a new appointment to celebrate, electing its first ever black woman sheriff in state's history. A swearing-in ceremony in Columbia County held more historical resonance than usual, as it marked the beginning of Jackie Salvatore's tenure as sheriff. According to Mid-Hudson News, the ceremony took place January 2nd at Columbia County Courthouse while local leaders attended the milestone. Salvatore brings almost 3 decades of experience to this promotion, having served 28 years with the New York State Police. With her established resume, Salvatore will take on this new leadership role as a beacon of diversity and dedicated to serve and protect communities. New York Assemblywoman Dee Dee Barrett, who represents the Hudson area, also administered the oath of office to Salvatore. She called the newly sworn-in sheriff a pioneering public servant as she entered this new phase of her law enforcement career. Today, I had the great honor of administering the oath of office to my friend and partner in government, Columbia County Sheriff Jackie Salvatore, Barrett said in a statement. Jackie is a pioneering public servant with a long and outstanding track record of keeping our families and communities safe, and is making history as the first black woman to serve as sheriff in New York State history. Salvatore, a Democrat, opted to run for sheriff upon the retirement of Sheriff Donald, previously serving as undersheriff. She defeated her Republican opponent, Lieutenant John Riviero, to assume the role. As a lifelong Columbia County resident, Salvatore remains an embedded member of its community. She ran on a platform of hands-on leadership to further crime prevention and officer preparedness. The seasoned officer also aims to address the opioid crisis while advancing equity and fairness in the criminal justice system. Upon her successful run, Salvatore shared how humbled she felt by her win. Now she may begin the work she envisions for her county as its historic sheriff. She wrote, I will continue doing what I've done for the past 3 decades, serving with integrity, supporting my peers, and upholding the law enforcement oath of honor for everyone in this county. The next article is titled, Rewriting the Rules of Southern Hospitality. Larry Morrow brings a new vision to New Orleans. This article is from BlackEnterprise.com. Soho will bring together over 25 hospitality leaders, including Rick Ross, Pinky Cole Hayes, Ty Martin, Cleveland Spears II, and Keith Lee, to inspire the next generation of hospitality leaders. You may not know the face behind the founder of the most sought after restaurants and nightlife experiences in New Orleans, but you can see, feel, and taste what Larry Morrow brings to the city in several places throughout the city. Most locals and visitors alike are familiar with his restaurants, Morrow's Monday, Sun Chong, Morrow Steak, and the recently opened Spicy Mango. Then There are the nightlife venues, Treehouse and Hide Seek, and coming down the pipeline is Larry's Po' Boys, marking his 8th location. Morrow opened 6 of these locations in 4 years. And just when you would assume that he would take a break and let people shower him with gifts on his birthday, he's instead gifting aspiring restaurateurs and those who want to expand in hospitality the inaugural Southern Hospitality Weekend, SOHO. Hospitality is one of the toughest industries in the world, he tells Black Enterprise. There are so many moving pieces, and people need resources, mentorship, and the ability to be successful. SOHO is bridging the gap. SOHO will bring together over 25 hospitality leaders, including Rick Ross, Pinky Cole Hayes, Ty Martin, and Cleveland Spears II, along with content creators like Keith Lee, with over 20 sessions during Morrow's birthday weekend. While the weekend will feature exciting events like the Roll Bounce Skate Party, a VIP networking brunch, and an all-black evening celebration, there will also be panel sessions and workshops attendees can learn from. Morrow said the event is all about uplifting the next generation of hospitality professionals and preventing restaurants from closing. The first article is titled, Where Black Art Breathes. In these pages, we witness a year of black artistry that moved hearts, shook stages, and reshaped the contours of possibility. Moments that transformed 2025. There is a kind of beauty that comes only after the storm, born of ruin, heavy with truth, luminous as a rain-washed sky. In the year of 2025, when the seams of the United States strained under the pull of its contradictions, black artists stitched together something new from the frayed edges. And the cloth they made, rich, unruly, iridescent, covered us in a warmth no winter could dim. We have been here before. We know what it is to create in the shadow of calamity, to turn scarcity into abundance, exile into sanctuary. But 2025 gave us a new vocabulary for survival, one that stretched across the wide spectrum of black imagination. Across the country, art of every form became both refuge and rally. Painters, poets, dancers, and musicians alike carved out spaces for truth-telling. Galleries and museums swelled into sanctuaries. Theaters transformed into stages for confession. Streets became living canvases. And in the most intimate rooms, the act of creation felt like ceremony. Perhaps this is what this second renaissance, if that's what we dare to name it, has taught us, that art is not a luxury, not an afterthought in times of unrest, but the very ground we stand on when everything else crumbles. This year, black artistry refused the script of despair. It chose instead to imagine us whole. Exhibitions. Giants. Art from the Dean Collection of Swizz Beatz and Alicia Keys. Since its debut in 2024, Giants has traveled from Brooklyn to Atlanta to Minneapolis, leaving an indelible mark on each city it touched. The first major public exhibition of the couple's private collection, Giants, celebrates black diasporic artists through nearly 100 works spanning painting, photography, sculpture, and mixed media. The title itself speaks volumes, referring to both the towering reputations of figures like Gordon Parks, Jean Michael Basquiat, Lorna Simpson, and the monumental scale of works by contemporary visionaries such as Derek Adams, Melico, Mark Gossey, Micheline Thomas, Nina Chanel, Abney, and Titus Kaphar. As much a cultural movement as an exhibition, Giants reflects the Dean's ethos of artist supporting artist, forging deep relationships with creators and amplifying their voices on a global stage. Elizabeth Catlett, a Black revolutionary artist and all that it implies. Elizabeth Catlett's landmark retrospective brings one of the 20th century's most uncompromising voices to the National Gallery of Art in Washington, D.C., the very city that shaped the artist's formative years, featuring more than 150 works across sculpture, printmaking, painting, and drawing. The exhibition, which ran from March 9, 2025 through July 6, 2025, illuminated Catlett's decades-long career as an artist, activist who refused to separate her craft from her politics. From the poignant lino-cut, sharecropper, melding African-American and Mexican campesino iconography, to the marble bust, Nama, My Granddaughter, Catlett's art bridges geographies, histories, and cultures. Organized in the collaboration with the Brooklyn Museum and Art Institute of Chicago, the show underscored Catlett's deep commitment to racial, gender, and economic justice, as well as her belief in art's role as a tool for liberation. Rasheed Johnson, A Poem for Deep Thinkers. In Rasheed Johnson, A Poem for Deep Thinkers, which runs through January 18, 2026, the Guggenheim's spiraling rotunda is transformed into both a gallery and a stage for one of contemporary art's most important voices. For nearly three decades, Johnson has woven history, philosophy, literature, and music into a body of work that's as intellectually rigorous as it is visually striking. Nearly 90 of his pieces fill the museum. They range from his signature black soap paintings and spray-painted text works to immersive film, video, and large-scale sculpture. At the pinnacle of the space sits Sanguine, a monumental site-specific installation with an embedded piano ready to host live performances that bridge visual art and sound. With superfine tailoring black style, the Costume Institute of New York's Metropolitan Museum of Art delivers a three-century journey through the story of black dandyism. On view through October 26, 2025, and the theme of this year's Met Gala, the exhibition examines how self-presentation has served as both a form of resistance and a declaration of identity within the African diaspora. Inspired by Monica L. Miller's seminal text, Slaves to Fashion, the show unfolds across 12 sections, including champion, respectability, heritage, beauty, cosmopolitanism, and more. each revealing a distinct facet of this aesthetic tradition. Viewers encounter everything from 18th century garments to contemporary looks by Black designers. There are also paintings, photographs, and decorative arts by artists including Torque Wass, Dyson, Tanda Francis, Andre Grenard Matswa, and Tyler Mitchell. These works traced dandyism's evolution from Enlightenment-era England to the runways of New York, London, and Paris, illuminating its fusion of African and European style codes. Curated by Andrew Bolton, with Miller as guest curator, Superfine positions elegance, tailoring, and flair not as vanity, but as visionary tools, ways Black men and women have long fashioned themselves into symbols of power, beauty, and cultural possibility. The Last World, The Art of Minnie Evans. A few days ahead of Thanksgiving, Atlanta's High Museum of Art honors one of America's most visionary and under-recognized artists with The Lost World, The Art of Minnie Evans, opening on November 14, 2025, and running through April 12, 2026. Before embarking on a national tour, this landmark exhibition brings together more than 100 of Evans' drawings from her early spare works of the 1930s to the vivid dream-like mandalas that defined her later career. Born in 1892 in rural North Carolina, Evans spent years working as a gatekeeper at Wilmington's Air Lee Gardens. The experience infused her art with vibrant floral motifs and tropical color. In 1975, Evans became one of the first Black artists to have a solo exhibition at the Whitney Museum of American Art. With The Lost World, The High not only introduces her to a new generation, but reframes her place in global surrealism, revealing how her lived experiences, rooted in the South, yet universally expansive, shaped a body of work that will stand the test of time. The next article is titled Resume Rundown. Nia Siwux. Growing up at the bottom of the pyramid, Siwux is turning that disempowering label into a legacy. I grew up being told I wasn't good enough, says Nia Siwux. Now at 24, she's a household name and has learned to transform her pain into power, but she still reflects on what once was, notably cast as the underdog of the hit Lifetime series Dance Moms. She has emerged as not only a performer, but a creator, singer, and author who is reclaiming the narrative of her life. Her debut memoir, Bottom of the Pyramid, is both a reckoning and a love letter to the girl she used to be. When Siwux first joined the reality show at 9 years old, she was bright and ambitious, and she simply loved to dance. Baby Nia was so confident. She says of that time, she had this whole world ahead of her. Unfortunately, on screen, that shine was stripped away. The show's infamous six-person pyramid, put together by teacher and main character Abby Lee Miller, was controversial. For millions of viewers, that starting moment of each episode was the most entertaining part of the show. For Siwux, It was devastating and triggering midweek mayhem. Growing up with that is hard, she says. She recounts the numerous missed opportunities, the gigs taken away because of this running narrative, and how it still plays a role in her mental health today. Her new book takes the very words that once defined her and turns them into a statement of resilience. Its title now stands as a symbol of her survival. I realize the only person who can define me is me, she states. Just because you start somewhere doesn't mean that's where you have to end. Siouac's path from child star to young woman wasn't an easy one. Behind the camera, she faced challenges that went far beyond choreography. As the only recurring Black girl on the show for 7 years, she carried the significant weight of representation. I didn't have the luxury of just being a kid, she reflects. I felt like I had to prove a point that we weren't inferior, that we deserve to be there. That's a lot of responsibility for a child. The pressures extended to her appearance and issues that arose ranged from costume choices Siouac found culturally insensitive to scrutiny of her hairstyles during season 2. In episode 20, Miller criticized Siouac's braids, saying, "Fix this hair, cause it's horrible." This was just one of many tough moments the young performer endured throughout the show's run. My mom always told me, you have to be twice as good just to be in the room, Siouac says. Even as a child, I understood that. Through it all, faith and family became her anchors. When the critics were too much or the pyramid was too discouraging, Siouac leaned on prayer and the unwavering support of her close circle. However true, healing didn't begin for her until the show ended. When you're in it, you're in survival mode, she says. It wasn't until after that I realized the impact it had on me and I could do the work to heal. Writing the memoir became part of this process. Siouac doesn't shy away from revisiting a painful experience, including complicated relationships with cast mates, the toll of public comparison, and her own internalized doubt. Rather than vilifying others, she offers perspective. At the end of the day, we were kids, she says. We made mistakes and were guided by adults who didn't make the right choices. That grace is a through line in her journey. While some might expect a bitter blame game, Siouac maintains a steady determination to move forward. Her shine, once muted by editing and circumstance, is now even brighter. Little Nia finally gets to have her story told, says Siouac. She finally gets to see me speak for her. Though Siouac has built a career that spans acting, music, and digital creation, her memoir represents a turning point. For her, life is not about what she has done, but who she has become. Without hesitation, Siouac says her younger self would be proud as the girl once kept at the bottom has risen. Nia's experience is a reminder to Black girls and women that where you begin does not define how high you will rise. The next article is titled, Too Hot to Miss, The Sexiest Men of the Moment. Jaylen Brown is standing on business. The NBA superstar opens up about love and learning to shine. Athlete, activist, scholar, Jaylen Brown is what many would consider a triple threat. He embodies all three identities, but each in a different way. Athlete by profession, activist by purpose, scholar by mindset. Brown is okay with those words, but when I ask if he considers himself a sex symbol, he pauses, contemplating the question. What does that mean? He wonders. I've never really thought about it. It's exactly the kind of response that makes the Boston Celtics star so captivating and a perfect choice as one of Essence's sexiest men of the moment. I mean, here's a beautiful black man who is smart, who's creating a legacy both on and off the court, and who gives back to his community. Yet he approaches the idea of his own magnetism with curiosity rather than with ego. At 28, Brown is in a new phase of self-expression. The NBA champion who once kept the world at arm's length is now consciously opening up, sharing aspects of himself that had remained hidden. I think in the last year or so, I am allowing people into my world a little bit more, he says. I have usually been a very private, stoic person, but I'm just shining my light a bit more, expressing myself creatively in different facets. For years, Brown relied on stoicism as a way to navigate what he calls spaces that don't really fit my spirit. But that armor came with a price. I would go months without smiling, he admits. People probably saw that and thought, this dude is angry all the time. This dude is so tense. In reality, he's quite different. The people who know me know I don't take anything serious, man. I laugh and joke just like everybody, but I rarely show that to the public. His newfound openness extends to how he discusses the deeper aspects of his life, including love. He and his ex-girlfriend, Kiersey, who became a couple in the summer of 2024, reportedly broke up this past February. Though he's hesitant to dive into the personal aspects of his relationship status, I do ask about the state of his heart and how he feels about love overall. He responds with the same intellectual curiosity he brings to our entire conversation. Love is gratitude, he reflects. I am very grateful to have experienced love in my life, so at times, even when I don't understand it, it guided me. Well, we have run out of time for today's episode of Essence. We hope you enjoyed it, and be sure to listen next time. I am Ava Lewis, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Essence is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.